water. Madam Secretary, do we have a quorum?
Yes, we do.
Okay. We want to start with the Pledge of Allegiance to a flag. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Jim, you want to say a few words?
Sure. Well, thank you for this community and all of the many, many volunteers that have helped us to get to this point. Pray for your provision to finish out this last chapter and getting us through to the transition with going into January and all of the new things that that's going to bring. Lord, I pray that you would just align everything that needs to be in its proper place, and Lord, just give us favor and all of the things that we need to accomplish all of our goals. Lord, pray a blessing over this entire community.
Amen. And first thing on the agenda is the approval of the October minutes. Motion.
Motion.
Second.
Okay, October minutes are approved. Next thing is the treasurer's report.
From the period of October 18th to November 21st, we had a beginning balance of $9,084.30. We had a single deposit in the amount of 93 cents made from Jefferson Parish. Four payments totaling $597.51 were made for the website and email administration and for the deposit for our directors and officers' insurance. The remainder of the insurance invoice will be paid after the district assessment funds begin to be collected. There was a $25 wire fee for that was debited, but then it was reversed by the bank upon request. So John is looking at that if we do need to incur those wire fees as Jefferson Parish starts to give us our buckets.
They charge us $25 for 93 cents.
They charged us $25 for 93 cents. That was the first deposit. So
okay.
John was able to get that reversed.
Okay.
So we'll see what will happen going forward on those wire transfers. So ending balance after interest and service fee calculations, $8,490.59.
Do we know the 93 cents, was that like a test to make sure the account was functioning?
No.
What was the 93 cents for? From the Jefferson Parish.
Apologize, everybody. I thought 5 hours would be plenty of time to get from Lake Charles, but not today. The 93 cents was based on overpayment from someone last year, and I explained to them that we didn't collect an assessment last year, so there should be no overpayment. And they explained that because the tax office and the sheriff's office doesn't issue refunds, that they apply it to the next year's tax. And the way that the Jefferson Parish tax is allocated is based on your property taxes and then the assessment, a certain percentage. So somebody may have overpaid by $5. And so because the new allocation is a certain percentage goes to us, that's where the 93 cents came from. So I asked them to not ever do that again because it costs $25 to get 93 cents. So the bank did waive the fee. I went and talked to the bank and they gave us a freebie. So
did you talk to them? Are we going to get a $25 fee for each?
Yes.
Every time?
Yes, but I don't want to be responsible for an $800,000 check.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason we set it up that way.
Okay.
No, it's a wire.
No, but I mean, they could transfer the money by ACH.
No, it's a wire. They issue you a check or they do a wire.
Is there a way to minimize the amount of those wires were not coming in.
That's what I'm working on right now. I'm waiting on the director of the assessor's division within Jefferson Parish to let me know if they will allow us to do that. But the problem is, we don't know what we're getting until after the check is issued. Mm-hmm. So when they issue the check and the wire is that same day, that's when the amount is known. So it's not like you get a heads up, hey, next week you're going to get this. So we will probably pay 4 to 5 wires per year, so $100 to $125.
Oh, okay.
It could be a little more, it could be a little less. It just depends on when the taxes come in, because as soon as they come into the sheriff's office, that's when they allocate them the following month.
They do it once a month? Or?
Yes, once a month. On the same day. That's what they're doing.
Three. Well, we start.
Oh, okay. So the sales tax ID discussion, there's been some emails back and forth. I didn't read your last one because I left Lake Charles yesterday. I've been in the conference. Is that clarified now?
What?
That we, so you guys understand, we are going to collect sales tax through the golf course. And in order for us to collect sales tax, which we have to have a sales tax account with Louisiana. And most of the time, you just, if you have your business, your corporation or your LLC, you use that to apply. However, we're trying to avoid being a business and just be an entity. So that's where we were. So is there anything clarified?
In the email that you didn't read, there, I mentioned there is a form which I believe now is an all-inclusive form for various taxes, sales tax, unemployment tax, or whatever taxes. There's about 10 of them listed on there. So rather than applying for different tax ID numbers for each tax, the Revenue Department has now developed a form where you check the box for which tax you're applying for, and it's called a Louisiana Revenue Tax ID. So it's not a sales tax ID, it's not a, you know, a withholding tax ID, it's just a revenue ID. So when you make your remittance, I haven't gotten to that point yet as to whether or not you have to make two different checks. You send it all to the Revenue Department. If there are forms for reporting them, that I would leave up to the CPA to determine which forms need to be filled out and sent in with the tax. Not that we have any employees, but one day we might. And there is, on the form, a check the box for the type of organization. Be an individual, a corporation, a partnership, and one of the boxes is governmental. So, but that's where it stops with information on governmental. The balance of the form has to do what date were you incorporated, when was your LLC formed, what about your part? There's no more information having to do with a governmental entity that's applying for the revenue tax number. So my thought was, in that case, what you do is put governmental, just put not applicable for all the rest of them, and then attach a copy of our legal status, which shows political subdivision, state of Louisiana, mm-hmm. created by the Jefferson Parish Council, ordinance number such and such, Louisiana revised statutes, which is our legal status that you would see, say, in an act of sale where it's called the appearance of parties, but it's basically the same thing, and attach that. Now, the easiest thing to do would be to call them and find out and explain the dilemma as we see it on their form, where the form is evidently anticipates a governmental agency applying for the tax revenue ID,
Otherwise, they wouldn't have checked the box for governmental agency. But there's no other information for governmental agency. And just verify with them what I think I would do if I didn't speak to them, but I will speak to them and find out if that's the way it should be done. Or maybe there is a special form for governmental agencies, but then that wouldn't make sense because they wouldn't have put governmental agency on the general form that everyone uses. So that's the status of it right now. And the second thing is, since we're going to get a single number, tax ID number, to be used not only for the sales tax, we're going to go ahead and apply for it immediately, even though we're not going to have any returns due for at least, I don't know, 2 or 3 months?
No, that's separate. The sales tax we're going to be collecting immediately, and we have to give that to Troon Honors to put into their accounting system.
Okay, so we'll have it before, we'll have it next week.
Are they not able to collect the sales tax for us?
They do collect it. They do collect it, but it's on behalf of us.
No, it's our agent.
So we have to have that number according to them.
Correct.
Everyone else does it.
Yes.
Okay. So on Cafe Hope's side, they have their own sales tax? Okay.
Correct. So the only taxes we're going to be dealing with for sales tax are the golf operation.
Okay.
And they're going to do all the reporting. They'll probably even pay this. Like, they will handle it. They just use our tax number to do so.
So I did ask the Finance Committee these questions. Mm-hmm. And the consensus seemed to be that you're right in terms of if we're collecting sales tax immediately or even if we don't, as long as we have the number, we just report zero tax per quarter.
Correct.
So I think the question you just answered in terms of whether Honors can have their own number, but the reason that I kept getting confused online was I kept seeing kind of the second part of that form that Harry was discussing,
right. And
it seemed like a precursor was registering for the Secretary of State. So,
right.
But so if we don't have to, then.
But yeah. Unless someone forces us to do so, I don't want to do that because you then have another corporate entity to manage, which needs directors or member managers, whatever it is.
And so that's not a requirement. But the reason it came up on the Secretary of State's site is because they do that with the GoBiz as a ancillary to actually forming your legal entity, and they'll help you by directing you and giving you the form, but that form, I'm assuming the one that they're going to would give you, because you never got to that step where the way I saw the Secretary of State's website, you had to fill out all of your legal entity information, and then once that was finished, then you put finished, then it would bring you to the applying for a revenue number.
Right.
So you don't know what form they're going to give you to apply for until you finish filling out all the other stuff.
Right.
And you've got to put something in there, otherwise they're going to say you've got to fill in this blank. You know how the forms are. If you leave a blank, it says red line, red mark.
The one thing was it said for the Department of Revenue that we would need a charter number from the Secretary of State. So I don't know
if
we can just say not applicable.
That's
there.
Right. I mean, every governmental agency pays sales tax, and they're not going to go form another legal entity just to be able to get a sales tax.
Someone needs to get on the phone.
I am.
It's a lot of speculation. Secretary of State should have nothing to do with this. It's the Department of Revenue.
As I said, he does it as a service with a GoBiz because
right.
he helps businesses get started.
Right.
And
right, but
forms.
You wouldn't go to GoBiz. That's
right.
the point.
I went to the Department of Revenue.
Now, I did realize why I couldn't go back to the form that I was filling out on the Department of on the Secretary of State because of the governmental hacks that have been happening. So I don't know if maybe you want to wait a couple of days. Yeah.
No, I'll call. I'm going to call somebody in the Revenue Department because it's their form. And since governmental entity is on the form,
right.
It's got to be that form that we use.
Okay. Enough about that. Agenda item number 4. So the governance plan for 2020. I would like to see, you were working on governance and some of the issues that we had to do just over this past year. Veronica is also working on an onboarding document for new commissioners when they come on so that they understand what their responsibilities are, what their requirements are, the ethics training, et cetera. So I would like to see in December's meeting the actual annual requirements for this commission to do. So all of the individual commissioner, what their requirements are, such as the financial disclosures, the swearing in whenever you take office, ethics training, anything else that's in there.
That's 90% of it.
Right. But also what the commission itself has to do, such as file the annual report by March 31st.
That's a lot more involved.
Just so everybody go through the bylaws and make sure that we know what exactly needs to occur so we can review that in December and make sure that we're on track to not forget something.
Can I just ask kind of an operational question? So my email account is the one that is contacted through the website, you know, when people do the contact us form. And obviously, as a governmental entity, we have an obligation to retain records.
Right.
So are you guys planning on reassigning or just like renaming my email? Or
I want to see if I can. I thought about this when I created them, right? But I wanted people to know who it was coming from, and just rather than say just Commissioner One, right? I don't know. I'll talk to GoDaddy to find out if I can redirect. And then I saw your email. I like the idea of having an information only, and that's where everything goes. And that's good for archiving purposes as well. So I'm hoping though that there's a way to associate from your account to John's account.
Mm-hmm.
If there's not, then we'll just archive when the commissioners leave. We'll archive that person's inbox, save it to the Dropbox that we have, and then start a new one. And then that way we still have preservation of records. And then it'll cost us, I think, another $5 a month to have that information email address. But that's good because then we can, whoever the secretary is, mm-hmm. will have access to that one.
Mm-hmm.
And all the information that goes to contact us, or if you go to the website, or anything that we sign up for, that'll be the email address right. that's used rather than mine or yours or whoever's, which at some point will no longer be in existence. So, Harry, can you take lead on that? And Veronica's on the actual governance plan. And then Veronica's doing the onboarding. And all of us look at the bylaws and just make sure that we haven't missed anything.
Do that. I will.
Thank you, sir. Okay, Cafe Hope League's final. I have the final comments from Cafe Hope. I got them Monday or Tuesday, I believe. Just a small, nothing really substantive. Rather than paying in arrears, I set it up in arrears originally because we weren't going to have money until April. And so I set up quarterly payments in arrears so that we wouldn't have anything due for January, February, March until April. they're fine with waiting until April, but once April drops, they want to do it advance payment, so that they're not carrying operating costs for an entire quarter. So I told them that's not a problem. As long as they allow us to pay it whenever we actually receive the revenue, then paying it monthly or quarterly in advance is not going to be an issue.
Are we going to pay it monthly or quarterly?
They asked for quarterly. I'm probably going to do monthly. If you pay it and something happened, 2 months later, that's just a little bit too far out. So I think probably monthly. Plus, as we get toward the end of the year, based on our budget and my projections, money's going to be extremely tight. So I don't know, and we're going to need that revenue coming in from the golf course, and we won't see any of the end of the third quarter's revenues until the fourth quarter. So we might be down to where we only have just enough to survive. So I wouldn't want to pay in advance 3 months. Another issue, they had something with the operating hours for the grill out by the pool. And I told them so that we can have this thing signed, I will change it to where there is a provision that if insurance is more than we think, then we would renegotiate the terms as far as our payment. Because they were told that insurance could range from $25,000 to $50,000. It's a large range. I think that's a little absurd. And I talked to Chad with Honors, and he is going to have his insurance guys give me a call as soon as possible. They get a better rate anyway because of their dealings nationwide. But we need them to look at this particular case with Cafe Hope being a separate entity inside a triple net lease and find out if it's better for the district to have the insurance for the whole thing, for Cafe Hope, for the golf course, liability, et cetera, or if we're just an additional insured and Cafe Hope does one and then we do the other one for the golf course. So if that question is not answered by the end of next week or the beginning part of December, then I'll just draft a provision to put in there to protect them in case they get a $50,000 insurance bill. And then hopefully I will post that lease on the website as soon as I've made those changes. And everyone can review it. And if you have any comments, feel free to call me, email me, send it something for any of the commissioners. We're not going to debate it, but if you have some comments that we missed something or a concern, feel free to email or call. And I'll give it a couple of days between the time that we post it until we actually say to Cafe Hope and TCC, okay, we're good with it. Y'all execute. Okay. Golf Management Company updates. We've been moving and shaking. Chad Leonard is our operations guy that's taken over. He's our POC. Fortunately for us, he lives in Pensacola, Gulf Shores.
Yeah,
Gulf Shores. Which is really nice because for travel, we don't have to pay for flights, which, if it had been someone else in a different location, we would. So he's been up here a couple of times. He's interviewed most of the staff, and they are doing employee onboarding starting in the first week of December. So we are rocking and rolling. We've got the plan that we're working on to give to all the members. You and I are responsible for this in conjunction with them. Is the rules of the road, golf play for dummies, whatever you want to call it. We want to make sure that everyone understands if they're new to the game of golf, there's a certain etiquette. You can't just walk out of your backyard and go onto the field or go onto the course. You have to schedule a tee time. You can't just, if it's open, that's fine. But some people may not know that, and they may think, oh, I have a golf membership, and just grab their clubs and, start playing. Also, it's going to be to explain the membership. TCC is working on their December, their last mailing to let all the non-members know what's going on. And I believe charging privileges, didn't we say stop them on November 30th?
We're letting charging privileges continue through the end of December. And you'll receive, if you're on account here, you'll receive an invoice January 1 for any non-member.
Who decided that? Based on what, though? Because when the last meeting that we had, when we were discussing the timeline, we were in agreement that the club would stop charging November 30th, so that there wasn't, when we do the active sale and the closing, there's going to be money somewhere in the middle.
Right. But that money will come to Timberland, to the country club, and then the country club will admit that to exhibit. We started to run into issues with people that are accustomed to coming here and charging, and felt like it would enhance the cash flow situation if we allow people to continue to charge.
Okay. All right. At some point soon, we need to talk because I need to make sure that plan is actually going to work with our plan. So we don't have to discuss it right now. There's a lot of questions
that
we need to.
A lot of questions that need to get out.
But and we'll make sure that the Honors is on board with that, the Cafe Hope's on board with that, and that we're on board with that. I don't think that should be a unilateral TCC decision.
Well, part of the issue is it has to do with Cafe Hope. If we cut off charging, we're cutting off Cafe Hope's ability to function and sell stuff to our members the way they're accustomed. Like it's more than just saying, oh, we're not going to allow you to charge. It ends up getting a little more complicated than that initial conversation.
Okay.
And there's a whole lot of other conversations.
That's fine. But if some, just for TCC and Cafe Hope, if something changes from what a previous assumption that I have or the district has, then and you guys have been very good about this. It's not an attack on you. But I was not aware of that change, and that affects how we plan to do the handover, right? So we'll talk later. We'll make sure that Honors is good with that and that our plan actually fits that decision. Okay, so they're doing employee onboarding. They're putting together the golf etiquette, and then we're going to take that and add the membership information to that. Hopefully get that mailed out in December.
Who's working on the actual form that each resident homeowner has to fill out to give the names of his spouse or she and her spouse, the kids.
Ronnie and I are tagged to do that along with Honors, because we're also looking at point of sale changes, and so the point of sale and merchant provider that you use has different fields depending on who it is. So once we know this is the point of sale, this is the merchant provider, then we will match the form to make sure that we capture the appropriate information so that no one, and this is another problem with that whole stopping the charging. Charging privileges are going to stop at some point regardless, because you can't, under the new system, we're not going to allow, and neither is Cafe Hope, allow charging unless you have a credit card on file. Or potentially a bank account to do an ACH.
Is there a way that we can work this to where it's effective January 1st?
We can, but you have to have the members come in, fill the information out, and bring it, right? So if we can have it done and sent out along with everything else and then come back in, we also have to have somebody to input that information, right? So the next 2 months is going to be extremely complicated administratively to extinguish TCC, have the district up and running through Troon, and make sure that all the members, both resident and non-resident members, all that information transfers over, because TCC knows who the members are right now, and they have all of their information. They've got their address because they're either a social member or a golf member. And so those people are easy to contact. But in the TEIA's directory doesn't have everyone's email on, right? And there are people that are in the district that are not in the TEIA. And so making sure that we have all the appropriate owners, not the people living there, because we know who that is, but the actual owners, just making sure that they have the form and that they bring the form in. And so there's going to have to be a point to where you stop charging privileges just so that you can actually convert from the old one to the new.
Well, I mean, my thought, I'm actually kind of a question. If TCC continues charges through December 31st, then is it not possible that during the month of December that the form be circulated to all members of the district to fill out and get it back to Troon or to TNIBD with the requisite information that's going to be on the form? Otherwise, they won't be able to charge, and depending on activities, you're not going to know whether a 15 or 12-year-old boy who may come here to use facilities on January 10th is someone who is a child of a resident. I mean, if you don't have all of that information,
right,
you know, you have no control.
Right, we're working that. Like, everybody's aware of it. Just the transition is in work. It's all on the big to-do agenda list that I created. It's all on there.
That's where the nightmare is going to be.
Yeah, but Troon has done, you know, all their golf courses they have, that, you know, have, most of them have charge privileges, so the only reason this is a bit different is because the members that are members of the district are now members of the club, right? Whereas when they have another golf course or another club, people come in and give their information to become a member, right? So they come to you, they give you your credit card, they are presenting you with the information. In this case, we have to go find the person. So it's a little complicated, but nothing we can't figure out. It might be a little messy at first. But
you would think 90% with emails and say the TEIA's information list, you may have 10% that you'll have to physically either go knock on the door, do some more research, or how do you get in touch with them?
Well, not really, because if they don't want charging privileges, then, you know, I'm not going to go door to door asking people if they want to sign up for charging privileges.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. If you tell them in the form that until this is filled out in return, you can't really become a member.
That's correct.
I mean, that's basically it. Filling out this form correctly with all the information required and requested is the first step of being a member. Until that's done, you're not a member.
Right.
Just like if I went to Timberlane and said, hey, I'd like to become a member, and you say, well, here's the forms, fill them out, put all your information down, return it to us, and we'll check it out. It's going to be the same type of situation.
The notification of signing up for the charging privileges, that's got to be a mailing, right? Because we have to let owners know.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely a mail.
Okay, all right.
Sure, and now, you can have the forms here. We can put it on the website, right? But we need to mail it, because the people, we have addresses of homeowners mm-hmm. that are different from the actual address, right? Mm-hmm. And so as a homeowner, you are allowed to, in some of our rules that we're creating, you're allowed to assign that. Like, if you want to assign that to your renters, you're allowed to do that. But the resident of the home is not necessarily the member. So it's going to have to go to the mailing address that we have on file, which may or may not be accurate based on the tax assessors.
Well, so that would be up to the owner of the property to get it to his tenant.
And what?
If the tenant, if they don't do it, the tenant doesn't have any privileges. Their problem.
Yeah. Why would the assessor's roles not be accurate? Like, is there a certain cutoff time that the changes, you know, like maybe closings might not be listed?
Oh, yeah.
It's not automatic. It could be a few months.
It might be in July.
Oh. Gotcha.
They closed the rolls early.
As far as the
charging
privileges go, when we discussed it, December 31st, everything's being charged to Timberland Country Club using the Timberland Country Club's tax ID. That's why we decided to cut off the end there. All of charging privileges and accounts will close on that date. If the district wants to start collecting dues, or not dues, but sales and sales tax, they may use the same account setup that we have, but it will have to be on a completely different account. We have to close our books on December 31st. So that was the logic behind doing that. If every property owner in the district has access to a membership, but that membership has to be activated,
codified,
uniform, as Harry said, that's the point. If you don't want to come activate your membership until March, that's fine. That's mm-hmm. up to you. So I think you just simply need to send out a notification to every property owner that says you or your designee has to come in and fill out the form to activate your membership. Before you do that, you have a membership, but it's not active. You can't come in here and utilize the facility. So that part's pretty simple.
Right.
It's just a matter of notifying the appropriate agency. The only way to do that is, and I kind of agree, I think you go to either the tax rolls and use the tax address, or the voting rolls, and you can look at the voting rolls. The trick is, you're limiting to some degree who in a household can be a member. I can't say, hey, my friend over here lives with me. So in your rules and regulations, you have to either vote at that address or something else.
It's,
all of that stuff.
It's going to be a dependent shown on your income tax return. So if you have your brother living with you, he's not a member.
Okay.
Unless
it's
you're
owners of the property and dependents.
Their dependents and spouse.
What about adult children that live with you?
It's not a dependent. I mean, unless they're on your taxes because they're your dependent.
Right. I think.
I'm just asking from the strength of the conversation. So you
I think as long as
an individual to bring in a copy of their 1040 and show it to someone here in this office in order to prove who's there.
I don't know if we're gonna.
You can't do
that. But there's also ways to see, to find out who a dependent is outside of seeing an actual 1040.
You can ship.
I mean, it could be. It's going to have to be figured out. So
it's going to be verified.
The driver's license that shows that address. That lives with you, that's 23 years old in grad school, I would think you'd want them to be participating in the club here.
Sure.
Okay.
I mean, but if they're still living with you because they're in school, then they're still.
It doesn't mean
right?
They're dependent on my taxes.
That's the point.
They may or may not.
Well, there's lots of regulations and rules already out there for how to treat dependents. And if you're over 21, but you're still in school, you know, if this, we will figure that out.
You said you and I are supposed to be working on this?
Yes. It's on your to-do list. It's on your assignment. Well, Ronnie, you and I are working on the membership information that's needed for Troon to put into the point of sale.
Okay.
Harry and I are working on the requirements of membership. Didn't we put in there already? We drafted it. I know we did. It's in the plan, right? That's what we work on.
Yeah, there is something.
On how you can, what a membership is, a resident member, an exception to a resident member is if you are a member by virtue of the owner of the home not being the resident, but the owner of the home has assigned his or her rights to that resident. And that's a separate form.
Now
so
that's the
that
only
person,
assignment. They can't,
that's right.
They,
that's
can,
right.
They can't assign it to.
You can't just randomly assign it. I mean, you know, it's got to be someone that lives in the. There has to be a reason for. Otherwise, people could be selling their membership for $200 a month or something like that. So.
Similar to a condemnation privilege.
Yes. Okay, so we'll get that mailed out along with everything else that goes in the mail in for December. All right, number seven on the agenda is the SBA assumption updates. They denied us twice. The first time they denied us before they saw the documentation. And the second time they denied us because they followed a checklist and didn't use their brains, which I figured that they would do because it's the federal government. And so we reached out to the regional director and said, hey guys, what do you want to do? Harry and I have discussed several different legal options, legal remedies. So depending on the final answer from the SBA will depend on what we do. But in no way, shape, or form is the SBA's decision going to stop us moving forward with what we're doing. It's just, it may change how we do certain things, but we're still moving forward.
Right.
That's gonna kind of have an impact on the final deal with the 268. Right?
Could, depending on how it goes down.
Not necessarily.
I
mean, it could.
Okay.
But it all, right. So,
okay.
There's several different ways to go about doing this. And so until we've decided which way is the most correct based on our goals and based on the conversation from the SBA, the final, like if the regional director calls and says, okay, there's nothing more we can do, you know, then we'll make that determination.
But that's the point, though, is that even though there may be another way around the Mulberry Bush, the deal with Timberland or TCC can't really be finalized until we decide how that's going to get done, because there may be something in that agreement that has to reflect what it is that we want to do in order to keep those loans, right? Basically.
No.
FA covered too.
So we're moving forward. The only real question is how do we deal with the SBA from this point forward? Let's put it that way.
Okay.
And that. There are several alternatives, as John mentioned, that we've already considered, all of which are viable. It just depends on which one we decide to pursue from a legal strategy standpoint. But that's not going to stop or in any way interfere with the closing with Timberland before the end of the year.
And speaking of closing, I didn't see a response to my email. You did on Don Hingle closing for us.
Oh, that's
for
fine.
Either free or a very nominal fee.
I do believe we ought to get the title policy, though, from good stewardship reasons.
Okay.
Even though we all know the title backwards and forwards. For future generations and the public, just in case something goes wrong, if we don't have a title policy, we're out $2 million. That's not going to sit well with a lot of people.
Sure.
So.
Sure. Well, you don't definitely need it, okay? People think that you need it. There are good reasons for it. There are also good reasons not to. Cost is one of them. The other thing is, a lot of people, two of them up here, went through all through these records, attorneys. There's attorneys that live here. There's plenty. Don Hingle's an attorney. He lives here. Roy Gattuso's an attorney. Lives here. All property lawyers. So there's enough people with enough background and history and access to title that we've done what an abstractor does to get title insurance, right? Mm-hmm. That's been done. My second reason for not, I'm not saying don't do it, I'm saying we really need to look at it, see how much it costs, because not only is the cost a factor, but the SBA mortgage for the title insurance policy, for the, like, it may cause a concern if we don't have, you don't think so?
No, not for title. I I issued title policies.
Okay.
Did abstracts, closings, issued title policies, etc. And an owner's title policy merely guarantees that your title is not suggestive of litigation, and the exceptions will be any mortgage that's outstanding. If there's restrictions on the property, that'll be an exception. If there's a servitude on the property, that's shown as an exception in the policy. So your policy basically covers someone committing fraud in the sale. The person that really said they were the seller wasn't the seller, and the seller comes forward, I mean, the owner comes forward and says, I didn't sign that document. Then that's what the title insurance is for. They're not going to insure a title that's got a defect in it. That's why they do the abstract.
That's right.
Now, but there are instances that, I mean, I had one where a guy sold a piece of property and he was legally separated from his wife. His wife didn't sign it. The first title company missed it, and they insured it. And when I did the exam, saw that, the title company had to pay the purchaser because the purchaser didn't have clear title because he was trying to sell it, because when he acquired it, the wife didn't sign the sale to him. Right. Only the husband did. So that's the type of the things that it would cover. And again, when we're all dead and gone, I don't want any title problem that is not covered by insurance. Just like, hey, we have director's insurance as commissioners. I don't plan on doing anything that I need insurance for,
right.
But you damn well better have it.
Right.
And again, somebody, like, just like for our insurance, anybody can sue anybody for anything. So if someone does come along and just makes an allegation of some sort pertaining to the title or something wasn't done correctly, you just call the insurance company and say, hey, guys, we're getting an adverse claim to possession or to title. You take it over.
Okay.
And it's not terribly expensive in light of the total cost of this whole thing. I can give you the exact quote when I get home.
Okay. Well, then we'll have to discuss that in December.
It's not terribly expensive.
Yeah, what is the amount of settlement on the sale price of the property, or the price of the insurance?
The sale price.
Okay. So
for an owner's policy, it's the sale price. Mortgagee's policy is the amount of the mortgage. And the title premium goes down per thousand after, you know, it's so much per thousand for the first 100,000, and between 100 and 500, the percentage is a little lower.
Oh, it's definitely being considered.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get into it, but I will tell you that just like Harry said, some Anderson didn't sign a paper on which this building was built, and it didn't go to a sale. It couldn't go to a sale for a year and a half because they didn't take title insurance. Mm-hmm. I mean, the party to that. Mm-hmm. And they had four or five attorneys who were looking into the commercial building, whatever, West Jefferson 1 and 5. And they had been looked over or whatever, and the building was built. And what happened when the wife died, and the 6 kids were in Saudi Arabia all over, and the property didn't sell, and there was a major lawsuit, and they could have taken insurance for 2,000 bucks. But, you know, it's not $1 million.
And it's a one-time cost, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Anything from any of the commissioners?
Yeah. Where is this to-do list that I'm about? It's not on Dropbox.
What do you mean?
That was like John did to me that meeting, probably about our third meeting, when he came in and said, "All right, Harry, give us an update on that thing." And I had the slightest idea what he was talking about. And he said, "Oh, okay, I'm pulling your leg.
All right. So a new requirement of commissioners is you can't be a Luddite.
A
what?
A Luddite.
What's that?
You with computers.
That doesn't sound like a very terrible
comment. No, no. It's my mother-in-law. Like, just technologically, you know, keeping up.
Yeah, a little hampered.
Yeah. A little bit challenged. Yeah, that's all right. We'll figure it out. I'll send it to you again. I mean, you can address that if you want to, right?
Okay.
But so Ryan, you can just come down with anything, Ryan?
Based on, no.
Okay,
so we've been sort of going back and forth if we should contract a CPA and pay that bill to get some assistance from them, answer questions, and just keep us on track and make sure that we're doing everything that we need to do to be compliant. If that we don't know everything that we need to know to give the scope of what we will need from a CPA, to tell a CPA for them to give us a proposal of what it would cost us. The Finance Committee has sort of agreed, like, we really need to see what happens as we go to determine what is needed. Philip Rebo, who has a lot of experience with government entities doing audits for governmental entities, he has offered to volunteer his services for us, but we do not have to pay for CPA to perform those type of tasks for us. He will assist us with whatever is needed. However, an audit would need to be performed by another CPA, just for obvious reasons. He lives here. But that is not required until the following year. So this year we only need a sworn financial statement, and so we can do that again with his guidance. So we really don't have a need for a CPA right now with someone like Philip and other CPAs on the Finance Committee assisting us. Is everyone comfortable with that to save us some money?
I like the price.
So the reason this came up, right now I'm trying to make sure that we have a budget put together for next year so that we can discuss with Troon the revenue that's coming in with them. We got to figure out how much of a line of credit we need, if any. There's lots of things that need to be figured out. And a CPA would obviously be some type of retainer or hourly fee, and so I need to know how much it's going to cost us in general to have this accounting done. Cafe Hope is keeping its own books, and Troon is keeping its own books. So we will get reports, accounting reports, right? So we don't have any need to actually to do anything on that reporting. However, we're going to have some kind of bookkeeper or some person monthly when we pay TC, or when we pay Cafe Hope, or if we pay this lease or pay tax, whatever it is that we pay, that needs to be input. And another reason that I want a CPA, if we need one, but one reason I think that we do, even if it's just once or twice a year, is it's not just for the accounting itself, because most of that's going to be covered, and we can have volunteers do that. I want a certified public accountant that advises us, just like with an attorney. So if you have someone volunteering their time, they're not going to give us professional advice that we can hold them accountable to. But if we're paying a CPA, we can get that. So, because we've had lots of questions come up, and me and all of you guys have had to figure out legally, and it's a CPA. I'm not a CPA, but I've had to go read the law and pretend and learn enough about it to figure out, is this some kind of requirement? It would be much better, because we might not always have lawyers on the board that are willing to work for free legal stuff. So it'd be better to be able to call a CPA and say, here's our issue, tell us what we need to do. And now they're on the hook for it. And we are able to rely on that information.
Is that something that we need to shop for? Because we got those prices from Robert LaGreco. He seems hesitant to have us on a retainer type of relationship. He seemed like if we could just pay him as needed, his fee per hour, or an associate if we needed more bookkeeping services,
right,
for a lesser fee per hour. But he seems to think our what we would need from either of them would be very minimal.
Right.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, we'll see.
Okay.
We definitely will see. We've got some time. The reason that I wanted the decision made, or at least have an idea by December, so that for our budget,
yeah,
we can put that information in.
Yeah.
So his response doesn't fit the needs because it just says an hourly rate. Well, do we need 10 hours? Do we need 50 hours? Do we need 80? Who knows, right? But with that in mind, it's going to cost us $100 to $200 an hour for a CPA. Mm-hmm. We definitely don't need one on retainer. And so, you know, if we call them with an issue, they're not just going to give us the answer for 5 minutes and charge us, you know, 1/12 of an hour. They're going to have to research it. So, you know, $200 or $300 or $400 a pop minimum, I would imagine. So as long as that's once a month, maybe, then, you know, we could kind of guess $3,000 to $5,000. And we did have money already in the budget for an accountant. So as long as we're not going, as long as we don't think that we're going to go over that amount, then I think it'll be okay.
I think a lot of our budget is going to be kind of guesstimate.
Sure. Until the end of next year, yeah.
Right.
Until you have at least a year under your belt and you really know what your monthly or, you know, annual kind of fixed anticipated expenses are, separate and apart from what you're going to do with the golf course by having greens rebuilt.
Right.
Just your operating expenses.
Right. Yep.
Well, I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea to try to to budget for some amount for accounting services next year. But it might, certainly, it might be a good idea if this guy, if Philip could provide those services on a charge basis. And let him kind of guide us a little bit. I think now you really need to get somebody to these kinds of issues. You really should have somebody paid that you can hold accountable to. Maybe they can kind of, or he can kind of help guide us on how we should do that.
Right. Yeah. I think, and they have so far. There's just a couple of times to where, because we have differing opinions, right? We have a few accountants on the financial committee, you know, that thought differently, and so
I think what you're probably referring to is when we have a significant legal accounting question where you're going to want a written opinion,
yes,
and advice,
yep,
as to what to do and how to do it, then that's when you go with your CPA,
right,
and pay whatever his charge is. Maybe the others can phone calls or, you know, something just to give you a head in this direction, or you don't want to do that, maybe think about this. But
right,
when it comes down to a big thing and you want it in writing, it's like a legal opinion. It's one thing to tell a client something on the phone, it's another thing to put it in writing.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
Harry, Veronica?
Just the date of the December meeting.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So we changed the meeting for December. It's the same week. What did we move it up or move it back?
We moved it up.
To Wednesday.
We moved it to Wednesday. It'll be posted, but just most of you are recurring present members that attend these. And so just to give you a heads up for next month, it's that third Wednesday, not the third Thursday.
Yeah, 18th.
Because there's a conflict with the one of the commissioners.
Same time, though, right?
Yes. All right. Questions, comments? Oh, I'm sorry, Faye. Yeah,
you
said.
No, you answered it.
Okay.
Well, you answered it, and now you should stop this.
Okay.
And I understand, after you asked a big question, you don't have a very slim margin of error in your budget. I mean, nothing specific that you said. So you've got to use some in-house help and you don't need to do the same with the bond. Show us the money.
Right.
And you'll get over it. Is Captain Hope going to require a food and beverage minimum every month by team?
No, they can't. They can't do that.
Okay.
Because right now the way they do it is if you don't have that minimum, then it's but at this point you're not. Now, they will probably still do that for the non-resident members, like who are actually paying for their membership, and for the social members that are non-resident, they will probably, they're free to do however they want to. We're not involved in that at all. But for the resident members, there's no way to do that. That I'm aware of.
The Cafe Health that would be involved in the non-resident members, that would be...
No, it's them.
Matters, right?
Depends.
The social
membership is going to be strictly through Cafe Health. The golf is going to be through Troon, collected by Troon, but assignments to Cafe Health because they're handling the pool and the gym, et cetera. So they may, but there still may be a requirement for a minimum for a non-resident member. And that's up to Cafe Hope whether or not they want to do that. Because the TNIBD is not getting that revenue, right? It's going to Cafe Hope. Anyone else?
And when does the membership start?
January 1st. That's the plan. It's been the plan the whole time.
So we'll have, I apologize, I haven't been to a meeting in a while, but so we're going to have a full membership as a resident.
As of today.
Okay. And then what are we paying Cafe Hope? I don't know about that part. Or is that, you're saying we're going to make payments?
Yeah. So I'm not going back into that. I mean, it's been discussed, it's in the lease, but very briefly, Cafe Hope is taking over all of the expenses of running the building.
Right.
And so... in order for them to do that, we have to cover some expenses. They're not going to cover 100%, right?
Yeah.
So they're not paying rent, so part of their rent is to pay the expenses. But they're paying everything. So then we are, on a monthly basis, an amount per member paying to them for those operating expenses that they're not responsible for. Mm-hmm. So it's basically, if you're... I think it's $165 a month is what this comes out to, something like that, for the assessment.
Mm-hmm.
So $25 to $28, whatever that final number is, goes toward Cafe Hope. And that's us paying them to provide those social membership services to the member.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Ma'am.
I just had a question on the hours. You started to say something about Cafe Hope hours. Are they later than...
No. They wanted to change. We had the same hours for the pool, for that little grill area, and he wanted that to be able to be stopped at 2. Unless they have a, you know... If there's a need, if members are showing up and buying food, they will be open. What they can't do... is continue to stay open and have 2 or 3 customers come in because they're paying, they're wasting food because, you have food out. They're paying somebody to stand behind the bar. They've got electricity on. They've got, there's an expense to being open. And so they have to justify when to be open. We didn't want to get in their chili, so to speak, and tell them when you have to be open, like down to the minutia of hours. But we did want some minimum requirements, meaning Cafe Hope, in order to have this place without rent, they have to be open so many days a week and so many hours a week. If they were only open once a day or once a week, then that's not going to do us any good. It's not going to do the members any good because they have exclusive rights to food and beverage. So in order for them to have exclusive rights, we put some requirements on some hours of operation.
It comes down to if there's a demand, they'll stay open as long as there's a demand.
Yeah.
If people want to eat at 9 o'clock at night and there's a whole bunch of people that want to do that, they'll be there at 9 o'clock at night.
And I guess just specifically I'm saying, because in the past we definitely have filled it up with happy hours, and when they close at 6 and you have those meetings later, it's kind of hard, and a lot of residents asking for some evening.
Yep, I've explained that to Lewis and to Tim Falcon, and you know, the problem is when they do it, the people aren't here, you know, because I've like jumped up and down and said, fine, and then they do it. And like the Friday night meals, and I went in there with my family. I'm like, you gotta have. I go in there, and we're the only people there, except for the workers who were sitting down eating because there was nobody else in there. So we really have to drum up, you know, support for them. And I think we will. I think a lot of you that are in here do support Cafe Hope already. And I think once people are members, they feel like this is their clubhouse. They feel, you know, they're more a part of it. They're paying for it. They might as well come up and use it. So I'm hoping that that's the case.
Thank you.
Ma'am. Yeah, 3 minutes.
I'll be quick. I want to say them all, and you can just respond. One, is the name going to stay the same? Because I know that
name of what?
The country club.
Nope.
It's changing. Do we know that?
Yep.
Okay.
We don't know what it is yet. We're still debating that.
Okay.
Probably Timberlane Golf and what we come up with, something like that. But we don't want the name Country Club in the name.
Okay.
Right? We need a facelift.
Next question. So the account, if it closes on December 31st, the account receivable will go to the district.
Depends. But I'm not going to get into all that stuff right now because there's way too many variables. Some of it goes to TCC because TCC is paying stuff out of that account receivable. Some of it goes to, so it's just, it's a mess, which is why I wanted it stopped at a certain point in time. But, you know, if TCC has to do it then in order to stay afloat until then, you know, we just, December and January are going to be fun, to say the least. But we have Troon here. And we have Cafe Hope. So we've got somebody running golf that knows how to do these turnovers. And the food and beverage has already been taken care of. So really, they just got to drag us along and make sure that we're educated throughout the process.
Okay, I got two more. The Trin's taken as golf management. Are they bringing in their own manager? Or is it using the existing people and just training them? Or is there going to be new management with
Trin? That hasn't been, their goal is to keep the same people, right? They don't come take over and then clean house.
Yeah.
That would be bad for their business. That'd be really stupid. And it'd be bad for the workers. There's no manager. Typically when they do this, they do hire a general manager because you've got to have somebody that's overseeing golf and food and beverage. We don't need a general manager because our food and beverage is by another entity. So all we need is a golf superintendent and a green superintendent as far as management. That's all we need. The green superintendent will be a decision later on in the year because right now things are dormant. And so we don't want to pay someone. That's about an $80,000 a year job salary. So, you know, if we can wait 3 or 4 months, they have their agronomist coming in next month. Yes, they're coming in to assess the situation, and they will get with our current green speakers. They kind of say, like, this is what you need to do. They'll put together a plan, and then we'll go from there.
And the other person, you said there were two, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, currently, Richie is the golf pro, and if stays on, would be the golf superintendent.
And the last question I have, so first, the lead Cafe Hope has to do improvements in the building, right?
Correct.
And so do we have any sort of not going to say guarantee, but some sort of idea of what improvements we're expecting.
Yes.
I know
it's all written in the lease. It's all written in the lease.
Yes. Okay.
A dollar amount and certain items, right?
Okay.
And a timeline.
And a timeline.
I haven't been here in a while.
So
I knew that had to be changed.
The first thing they have to do is secure the building now. It's, you know, the roof and the leaking windows and all that kind of stuff. So they're going to attack that immediately. They have 7 years. No, yeah, three years.
3 years.
What is it? The first million, and then yes. 7 for the $2 million.
Right.
So guaranteed $2 million in capital improvements over 7 years. First million in 3. Now, if we move something to the left or the right based on the capital improvement plan that's being put together, then, you know, we can do that. We can adjust that lease agreement. We wanted to put a dollar amount in there so that we can hold them to it, so that we could say you have to put this money in there, otherwise you're in default, because you are they're not rent free because they're paying 25% of the operating expenses, which is like $50,000 a month. So they're not rent free, but the $50,000 a month plus the $2 million is a fair market value for renting, you know, what they're getting. But in order for them to put together the plan, they've got to do that with TNIBD. And with honors, we needed the golf management company to say, hey, are we going to use the old pro shop? Do we still need this over here? Are we keeping the locker room? Are we not? So a lot of these decisions couldn't be made until we had the management company. And the other thing is you have to put money into someone to come out to give, to build this strategic capital improvements project. It's going to cost money. And so Cafe Hope wants the lease sign. But everything that we put in the lease requires that anything has to be approved by us, any kind of, you know, major renovations.
And if there's an issue with Cafe, let's say something quality food or something like that, since there's not a general manager who is overseeing them, how would that in itself be corrected?
Through us.
Hold on.
Be addressed.
They're their own entity. We're not telling. If you have bad service, don't call the TNIBD. Okay, that's nothing to do with us. If there is a problem that continues to come up that is reflecting poorly on the district, then that would be something that we would get involved in. Right.
Right. Yeah. Don't call us and say my fish was cold.
Yeah.
No.
John, I'm sorry, I have to have these questions answered. So you, all of this will stop January 1st, and by the fact that you may not go to a sale.
No, we're going.
We're going to a sale. No, we're going to a sale.
Oh, you are?
Oh, yeah.
December 30th.
The 30th or the 31st or the 1st or the 2nd, sometime in that little 4-day window. Mm-hmm.
Wow, yeah.
Yep.
I
mean, look, that's what I told you guys, and that's what they backed, and that's what was in the plan. But, well, look, until such time as you're told different, that's the thing, you know. Now, we're kind of flying by the seat of our pants and building the airplane as we're, you know, moving. But I haven't seen anything that is going to change that date. If January 1st wasn't a holiday, we would actually 100% make the closing date the 1st. However, especially if we're asking somebody to do us a favor to do it for free, I'd prefer not to ask them to do it on a federal holiday. But sometime in that 30th through the 2nd window, I think that's right based on the calendar, Monday through Friday, that's when we plan to close, and, you know, haven't seen anything making me reconsider yet. Still got a month, so, you know, who knows.
But you have good intentions. You know, we've got to know your intentions. We're all, most of us are behind you.
I got not so much a question, but a statement.
Okay.
Number one, whether or not the closing happens the last week of December or mid-January, the closing is going to happen, but TNIBD will begin to operate that entity, whether or not the building has transferred hands.
That's correct.
That's all we're talking about is a sale of a piece of property.
Right.
But the business operation is going to switch over to TNIBG one way or the other, in order to one. So, and the membership will start. That's PCC's position. We've had that conversation.
Yeah. And honors to like everybody.
Yeah, right. We're all on the same page. There's no miscommunication between the three entities, and the same thing with Cafe Hope. The other thing is more of a party gifts kind of scenario. PCC will not, and I know a question came up earlier, PCC is not going to end up with any cash in the bank to transfer, whether we have receivables or not. We're still going to end up in the other direction. To that end, on December 6th, bring you and all of your closest friends here to the Country Club. We're having an ugly sweater pig roast Friday, December 6th. It's a Christmas party. It's free to arrive, but we will be accepting donations that night to raise funds. We have someone roasting a pig here. We're doing potluck style. We have some friends available, but bring some drink. Bring some food, come share some time with your neighbors and celebrate the holiday, celebrate the end of the Country Club, and hopefully raise some funds to help the Country Club get through the last 30 days that we have to get through. Right now, quite honestly, we're not there yet. So.
How much money do you need?
$35,000. Yes.
Dollars?
That's where we are right now. And I'll go on record, if we actually raise $35,000 that night, if I have an auction, whoever gives the most money will have the opportunity to shave my head at that point.
Wow.
All the flyers that are going out in the mail.
We approved it, yeah. That's the only thing we dealt with before you came.
Okay, well, action vote yes, so then. Because it's got five votes, so, right?
Oh, no, this was last month's meeting.
Oh, did y'all approve this month's? And, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Go on.